Uzbekistan, one of the biggest and historically dominant countries in Central Asia, is heading to another presidential elections next month. It's clear that the election will give Karimov one more term in office, but what is not clear is the path of the country's political future and how effective he will be this time in office, and what will it mean to the future of his regime and stability in Uzbekistan. The reason I ask this question is the following. He certainly do not enjoy the commanding figure as he used to in the past. Recent turmoil in his family is one of those clear indications, and recent reshuffle of regional governors and changes in his cabinet on February 11 shows level of his concern. Going forward, decrease in remittances and rise in Islamic militancy will only increase Karimov's challenge. Today, we want to discuss where Uzbekistan is heading with Karimov in office for one more term. To discuss the subject, I have Dr. Sanjar Umarov, who is currently president of Sunshine Coalition of Uzbekistan. Dr. Umarov, welcome.
Thank you.
Joanna Lilis, Uzbekistan watcher and journalist at EurasiaNet, is with us. Joanna, you also welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Here in Prague, I have Alisher Siddiq, Director of Uzbek Service and Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Kishlak Ovozi, a Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. So let's begin with you, Alisher. As Karimov is heading to one more term in office, what is at stake in Uzbekistan?
Thank you, Tahir. So you very correctly outlined three major problems, current problems, or the party-making news, like elections, then remittances, economy, and the family issue. All of these factors kind of joining in the current Uzbekistan's reality. Regarding elections, as you again rightly outlined, we don't expect any major shift or change there. This is not being called as elections. This is another prolongation of Karimov's rule in power, who stayed over 25 years. And the major question, the big question, will be how he will use that remaining time, because he's aging and we don't know about his health conditions at this moment, anything. So there are, as all of you might be, following the news and conflicting news and unconfirmed about his health conditions, that could be pretty much the game. But how he gonna use this rest of his presidency? Will he continue by kind of picking his successor? Or he will struggle with the other issues, other major problems like economy, with the falling remittances and the huge problems in economy. So that will be very challenging and very game-changing.
Dr. Umarov, do you agree with Alisher's points? Is there anything if you would like to add to this list?
I see, maybe everyone see at least two scenarios. One is negative scenario. There is a different ways for negative scenario if he will stay in power. And another one is a positive scenario, and maybe we can discuss this too. I may talk about at this time.
Right. Bruce, you're always free to jump in as someone present in studio here in Prague. Yeah, go ahead.
Obviously, one way or another, these are his twilight years in office. There's no doubt about it. And most men would think about their legacy. I'm not sure that he's going to have the time to think much about his legacy at this point. Certainly things are not the way he pictured them 20 years ago in Uzbekistan right now. But, I totally agree with Alisher about what the problems he faces are. I would add a little bit to that the reduction in the amount of remittances coming back to Uzbekistan goes hand in hand with the return of possibly hundreds of thousands and maybe millions of migrant laborers from Russia. And there are no jobs waiting for them in Uzbekistan. Four or five years ago, when Russia was having problems economically like the rest of the world, he tried to institute a program to find employment for people that were returning, but it didn't work out very well. He basically forced owners of plants and even farmers to accept workers and pay them and find money in their own budgets so that they would be able to pay these people wages. So all the farmers and plant owners were very unhappy that they were forced to accept laborers who might not have been that skilled at that particular job either. So that's going to be a problem, and it could create social unrest. He's going to have like I said, certainly hundreds of thousands of people returning home, and they won't be able to find work. Mm-hmm. And that's something he's going to have to address very quickly.
Joanna, now, with all these problems, Karimov already 77 years old. How do you see his next term in office?
Well, I think, I mean, I certainly agree with much of what's already been said here. And I particularly stress perhaps the angle of political stability here. I mean, it's plain that at the moment President Karimov must have the support of the elites around him, who are the people who actually prop him up in office. We shouldn't remember that much as Uzbekistan looks like a one-man show, it's not entirely monolithic, and there are many people who benefit from the system who keep President Karimov in office. But I think that as this next term, which as we've already said is a foregone conclusion, progresses, the question of political stability is going to come to the fore much more. And as Karimov ages, and you know, as he ages, the questions will increase about his state of health. There's going to be a lot of questions about the unresolved succession, and I think that we're going to see a lot of behind the scenes, or possibly not even public infighting, much as we've already seen family infighting over recent times. I think this is going to increase, and whether or not it stays behind the scenes is another matter, but it will be very destabilizing for Uzbekistan.
Right. Alisher, actually, that's your playground. I mean, how do you see this issue of transition or succession? When we are going to see that happening?
Mm-hmm. $1 million question, yeah? Okay. I would first of all jump into other things. Like, for example, yes, does they realize that Karimov is aging themselves? I mean, as a family, as a you know, a political establishment, I feel like they are also realizing that. I think they're also looking at it. His own family was trying to maximize its profits from enterprises they grip control on. There was infighting between his kids, you know, and then they're also grown-ups, and they are controlling huge, vast, you know, sectors of Uzbek economy. The recent is Akbar Ali Abdullayev, who controlled the whole Fergana Valley, imagine, and even according to those documents that were leaked to us, he was able to stream quite a lot of money, $800 million in cash, so they don't trust kind of some sort of Uzbek banking system, Uzbek, I don't know, they do their business in cash and they stream the money like that. So Akbar Ali was a person of whom, you know, who is he at the top of the the feeding chain? So, or he's in the middle, he's a manager of whom, of which member of the family? You know, there are so many questions. We can guess who are their superiors, but why he was sacrificed? Why Gulnara under home arrest? And many these questions that shows that family itself is not feeling very comfortable, though they're trying to get as much as they can, maximize their profits and get everything out of the country. And this is very telling from the interview that Lola Tilaeva Karimova gave to BBC, where she says, we don't have, as a family, they say, we don't have assets in Uzbekistan. So, or she said, we have only flat in Uzbekistan. What would we read from that? I mean, you can say, oh, she's good, you know, she doesn't have any asset in Uzbekistan. No, but what our reading is that they not invest in Uzbekistan. They don't invest in their future in Uzbekistan. They don't see them in Uzbekistan long term. So, and everybody around Karimov, we believe, think that way. So they don't have long term perspective for their stay, for their well-being. They clearly realize that whenever this time comes, they have to get the hell out of there.
Is it the time to talk about succession at all? I mean, that's another question. Bruce?
I would just mention that, you know, I think we're already seeing or getting hints of the succession battle going on now. It's, you know, for years and years there have been rivalries between the Interior Ministry and Inuyatov and his security forces and other clans and things like that. But, you know, I mean, the Gulnara house arrest, last year was actually a pretty frantic year for shuffling around. I mean, you could get the idea that the Inuyatov and the SNB were coming on top when Gulnara was under house arrest. But then a bunch of Inuyata friends in the Fergana Valley got, or in different places around Uzbekistan, got sacked during the summer. So I think the game is on already. You know, Uzbekistan is such an opaque country that we can't really get a good handle on it. But the little bits of information that come out seem to suggest that there's already some jockeying going on, and it's much more intense than it has been in previous years. So it's certainly something that's on the mind of the big power players, the people that Joanna referred to that are helping to prop Karimov up, you know, to try to put themselves in a position where if suddenly his health fails or something, and let's remember he's 77 years old and he's had bad health rumors for years and years, that they're going to be in a position where they can move on in and certainly at least keep what they got and maybe even propel themselves forward, because there's always the chance if you don't stay at the top that you're going to get thrown out and disgraced and thrown in jail and all kinds of stuff. So it's, I mean, the stakes are pretty high.
Joanna, you raised this issue of succession in our discussion, so let me come back to you. I mean, which direction do you see this succession struggle is going? I mean, there are lots of attention also in Karimov's own family and also immediate relatives. In which direction will it be? How you see it is going to follow in days to come?
Well, I think Bruce raised an interesting point about the infighting between different power agencies, the Interior Ministry and the Domestic Security Agency, known as the SMB. And what we do see, I think, despite the arrest that Bruce referred to in the summer of some SMB agents in the Fergana Valley, some powerful people, I still think that we do see that the SMB, the security agency, is extremely powerful in Uzbekistan and seems to exercise all the time more and more influence over all walks of life in Uzbekistan and over all branches of power as well. I mean, we only have to look at the recent replacement of the chairman of the Senate, the upper house of the Uzbek parliament, with a person who has a background in the SMB security agency, or with the power structures. And so I think that whatever happens in the succession process, it will be the SMB that plays a decisive role, unless, of course, something changes in the near future.
It is SNC's obviously an essential player inside of the country, but again, Uzbekistan is such a big country and there are lots of stakes on behalf of the international players there. Let me go back to Dr. Umarov in this case. What role the international community is going to play in case if there is a discussion about the succession of Karimov in coming days or near future? Dr. Umarov?
Let me first say something about history, recent history, and I mean 2005-2006. Many people think what, or even ask me, telling what you was in prison for years, you was out of the politics for 4 years. What do you know about politics? I said, you know, it was very interesting things happened in 2005-2006 when I was in prison. And this happened related to Saddam Hussein case. We remember when he was sentenced to death and when he was executed. At the same time, 12 Uzbek high official was under sanction. And, you know, it was time, at least two times, something like presidential cup or President Palais Cup d'Etat could be happen at that time, because many high official people think what next Saddam Hussein, like Saddam Hussein case, will be happening in Uzbekistan too. But, you know, the problem was, as I understand, the problem for them and happiness of the Karimov was, but he was not under sanction. He was not in the list of sanctioned people. So it means he's not guilty. He's clean, yeah? So which why they cannot remove him from the position, you know? So, and if, for example, now, after, if we will see what he will rest in the power for and he will go for re-election, I think what at least U.S. Congress will start to impose the sanction on Uzbekistan under new Magnitsky Law, global Magnitsky Law, or see what this may happen again. I mean, what we was see 10 years ago. So for Karimov now, there is a short time to regulate the situation. And I think exit strategy for him is to convert this election, because this election is will be illegal for him. He will be illegal president. He's not president. He will be usurpator. So he has the time to convert this presidential election to referendum and add 2 years for his power, to stay in power. But these 2 years he should use for reconciliation of the nation first and for integration of Central Asia under the name Turan with other Central Asia countries. In this case, I think he could legitimize his staying power, and I think also international community will support this. If he will say, okay, I am staying two more years in power, but I will use these 2 more years for a peaceful transition of power and for Central Asia integration under the name Turan.
Right, Dr. Umarov. And I think, Bruce, you got the question to Dr. Umarov. Please jump in.
Yeah, and you might have just been talking about it a little bit, but at the start you suggested that there were negative scenarios for Karimov's next 5 years in office, but there were also positive scenarios for his next 5 years in office. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about what positive scenarios you see that could happen in the next 5 years.
Yeah, positive scenario, as I said, is to cancel presidential election and make the referendum and for the next 2 years. There is two positive scenarios. I mean, for example, if all will be as is, in this case, if he will stay in power without any referendum and without any election, by this re-election, yeah, so-called. So in this case, I think the sanction will be imposed for the high-level, smart sanction, I mean, for high-level officials. Also, we could see the situation, what I see 10 years ago. I mean, that many people would like to remove him from the power, as it was in 2006. This one scenario, and our one scenario is if he will go to referendum and will have 2 more years, only 2 more years, if he will agree with, for example, Kazakhstan or Turkmenistan, let's say Kazakhstan, with Mr. Nazarbayev to create new entity, integration, Central Asia integration, new entity, Turan. For example, with the Kazakh Nazarbayev as the first president of Turan for 1 year, next year could be Karimov for 1 year. But during this time, new constitution should be adopted, and after that, the president of Turan should be elected by popular vote.
Dr. Umarov, you know, it's good to hear all these things, but how realistic do you think these scenarios are?
It depends on the political will of Karimov itself. So if he, but he should know about this exit strategy. I don't know if information go to him or not. This is a very big question. But he should know, someone should offer to him this scenario. I have only this possibility to talk via radio. Maybe other people or our other official, maybe US high-level official could deliver him this option.
Alisher, is there any reason for Karimov to be thinking about his transition? Is there any forcing factor him to think about this?
You know, I would always compare Karimov's situation with the nice New York cop who is going to retire soon. So, and whatever political games they're out there, you know, some movements, he would just say, I'm too old for this shit. So, over 25 years, a person was able to create a very smooth dictatorial authoritarian system, which just runs by its, you know, by its own. It's, he delegated some important security issues, delegated some agricultural issues. He gave some major, you know, directions to force children, teachers to work. I mean, we need cotton. In, on security, he says, you know, I don't need to hear anything about these bloody Islamic things. And then everything is just being done like that. So it's, I wouldn't call him like someone who totally controls, but he delegated things to his closest people, which, who are with him on the same boat and who gonna sink with him. So they very depend on retaining himself in power. So that's why, on your question regarding what international community can do, even here, he could build a very nice system. You know, he's a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch, for God's sake. I mean, what he haven't done? I mean, did he, put any obstacle for international call forces to go into Afghanistan, or he's, producing any nuclear weapons, or he's not cracking down on Islamic, you know, things. So whatever West wants from him, it's all on the table, and it's all be given to them twice more than they want it from him. Basically, I don't see any immediate kind of, let's say, attempt to topple him, to overthrow him. So, and as Joanna rightly pointed, there is a very powerful security service, which at the end would provide transition to a new leader. But the question is, I mean, they will provide, definitely, they will be smoother, like Turkmenistan type, you know, will be another leader. But for himself, personally, his family, that is the concern. That will not survive in Uzbekistan, because we never had a case when the previous establishment is not changed by a new one and not being persecuted. So we have it very fast. It's like coral reefs, big fish, it's smaller fish, and for that fish, there's another bigger fish. So it's endless process. There is nobody who was left alone in the system. Even security service themselves, I mean, they were allowed to do some sort of repressions. Even those who repressed Gulnara Karimova, they were also cleaned. The whole layer of those people were taken away already from the security. They're all in prison. So it's like an old Stalin time, you know. You allow to your security service to do certain repressions on generals, on whoever. But then, in order to avoid these guys to become some, you know, very self-confident, you know, to make them feel like they are touching God, that layer also is repressed. So, in fact, the Uzbek National Security Service is more harsher on itself than it's harsher on anybody else. I mean, it goes together as they carry out repressions on big people, on general population. So simultaneously, at the same time, the same repressions goes against themselves. So that's why we have two prisons full. One for political prisoners, another for security apparatus. So they are identically full.
Right. We are in 27 minutes. We're supposed to be ending soon. We were not able to talk about the potential impact of decreasing remittances or potential decrease of remittances on the next 5 years, and what role the radical or rising the radical Islam might play in upcoming 5 years. Looking at all these problems, issues, Joanna, where do you see Uzbekistan politically standing in upcoming 10 years?
Well, that's a pretty tough question, and I think that will depend a lot on the fate of Karimov himself and how long he actually stays in power, and then, of course, who takes over from him and what kind of system they put in place. But I think that if the system continues as it is, certainly Uzbekistan is storing up a lot of economic problems for itself under the current system. We hear a lot of talk about market reforms, but we see very little in the way of action. We know that Western investors shun the country because not really because so much because of political uncertainty, although that is a factor, but mainly because many Western investors have had terrible experiences in Uzbekistan and had their businesses appropriated. So we're seeing an economy that really hasn't implemented the type of market reforms that would give it some propulsion forward, very controlled by vested interests. And, you know, if that continues, combine that with the impact of falling remittances as labor migrants are unable to find jobs in Russia and as the value of their earnings goes down, there will be an impact, obviously, on the economy there. So I think we're going to see a rise in socioeconomic disaffection in the coming years. Now, whether that translates into a rise in support for radical Islamism is another question. Generally, radical Islamism is pushed far underground in Uzbekistan. It's very difficult to gauge how far the tendencies even exist. We can't judge from the numbers of prisoners who are imprisoned on charges of extremism because these are often trumped up. But I would say that obviously suppressing something generally will push it underground and will make it more dangerous. However, just that the way things are at the moment, if the security apparatus retains the kind of tight grip it has on Uzbekistan today, in the future, I can't see radical Islamism being given any space to operate. However, as I say, it remains an underground threat, and the nature of that threat is quite unpredictable.
Right. You know, this actually unpredictable answer is at the center of all this discussion, Bruce. What will come out from all this discussion, the transition of leadership question, has a potential impact to all region, Uzbekistan being one of the main countries. What scenario do you see involving in Uzbekistan as an end game? So,
yeah, we've hit all around the economic problems, and of course that's that's going to be the big thing. And I remember 20 years ago when Karimov's mantra was economic reform first and then political reform, and he, you know, here we are 20 years later and the economic reform never happened. That lays, you know, hard economic times at home, lay the base for a lot of other problems that can grow out of it. You know, your question suggested that it had greater impact outside of Uzbekistan, and of course I believe that's absolutely true. I mean, Uzbekistan neighbors all the Central Asian states and Afghanistan. 30 million plus live there, so that's almost half the population of Central Asia there. So if there's hard times in Uzbekistan, it means everyone's going to feel the pain that's around them. So there's, you know, that's another problem with the succession question, is that you have a lot of interested parties, and I'm not saying that maybe the neighbors would exert that much influence on the succession question, but it's going to be something that's going to weigh heavily on minds in Moscow, Beijing, and in Washington too, because they all want to see the successor be something, you know, that acceptable to them. In the Chinese case, I would suggest somebody who was more or less like Karimov. In the Russian case, clearly someone who was more pro-Kremlin. And in Washington's case, someone who is more Western-leaning a little bit, kind of like Karimov was in the first few years of after independence. So it's going to be messy. Domestically, there's going to be a lot of problems. You know, there's going to be infighting in Uzbekistan to stay by the top or get to the top. And then you're going to have a lot of outside interference, which probably won't be very obvious, but in fact, I'm sure it's already going on right now. You know, and I guess I'm going to say that it all comes back to the economics. You know, Karimov has to go back to what he was saying 20 plus years ago. If he can get that country up on its economic feet, it might help them pull through the succession process a lot easier than it's going to be, because, of course, certainly in this panel discussion would also know that Uzbekistan is not quite the homogenous country as some of these other ones. I mean, there's the Ferghana Valley, there's the center section, and then there's the far west, which is the desert. So in some ways, it's already a fractured country, and some people could take advantage of that. So to keep it whole, to keep it together, there's got to be some economic improvement in that country so that the people have some reason to stand behind the government now and the government that comes.
Right, right. Dr. Sanjar Umarov, final words, please.
I am thinking positively, and I hope what the, as you said, international community and also Uzbek people and Uzbek intelligentsia will add and will push for peaceful transfer of power in Uzbekistan and around.
Right, right. Well, colleagues, Bruce Panier and Alisher Siddiq here in Prague, and Joanna Lilis in Kazakhstan, and Dr. Sanjar Umarov from the United States, and thank you very much for being part of this fascinating discussion. It was a great chat, and we could obviously continue this for long hours to come. Very much grateful for all of your time for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.